Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
I'm Neil Stavem. That is not my theme song. Could be Ted's, probably, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Your kids might say it is yours, though, right?
Yeah, you know, the grandkids, a better chance of that, probably. Yeah. No, the grandkids actually got a great family. And we're talking, of course, Father's Day coming up this weekend.
That's right.
And so today we're going to talk about being the strong father your children need. The name of the new book is called Hero. So I thought we'd play a little...
the old Superman theme there.
Yeah, we both took our capes off for the show. So, because they get in the way when you're sitting down. I mean, it's fine when you're flying. And
I feel like I can identify the character in The Incredibles where I'm asking my wife, where is my super suit? Right? I never find my super suit.
Yes. And... that is... that's sort of my hero level
So.
Working in the cubicle there. Anyway. Well, we're looking forward. Well, we do want to just say thanks to the superhero friends of Faith Radio that support so generously. You know, our fiscal year ends here at the end of the month, and so many have been so generous. So thank you for that. If you have been an ongoing supporter, maybe monthly, or you've been regularly giving as time and it means a lot, we just want to say thank you for that. And if you've never gotten on board, we are a listener-supported ministry. We'd love to have you join in with us.
You can call 877-933-2484, press the number 3 to do that, or safely and securely online, myfaithradio.com.
So, and thank you, by the way, for listening wherever you are listening, and those streaming online on the Faith Radio app, which is free. You can download that and take us with you wherever you go. By the way, we do have some copies of today's book we'll give away, and we always mention you can call 877-93-FAITH to sign up for that. But I do want to just say, if you want to sign up online as well, we want to include you in the drawing for that. Because this is a book you want to have, read and enjoy, pass on to those that you love and care about. And we're talking Hero, being the strong father your children need, with Dr. Meg Meeker. Meg is author of Strong Father, Strong Daughters. She spent more than 30 years practicing pediatric and adolescent medicine and counseling teens and parents. She's a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics and a fellow of the National Advisory Board of the Medical Institute. Popular speaker on teen issues, frequently heard on nationally syndicated radio and TV programs. And we are honored to have her with us today. She has a medical practice in Michigan. And she and her husband, Walter, have 4 children. And welcome to Connecting Faith, Meg.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
I want to talk hero fathers today, being strong fathers. And I was thinking, there's a lot of talk about branding today. And if we were going to maybe change the father brand so that it would be more aligned with what it should be, what were some things that we'd need to do?
Well, if we changed it, my hope is that in 10 years, when we say the word hero, we think of father, not or dad, not NBA star or NFL star. You know, I really wrote, I used the word hero as the title of the book because this is how children see their fathers. You know, fathers don't think of themselves as hero, but their kids do. And the book is really written to sort of show fathers how their kids see them. So really just let them sit behind a child's eyes. So being a hero father is really all about learning how to get the big stuff right, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's what's really important for fathers to know, is not to focus on just the small stuff, but to a hero to a child is a father who loves them like crazy, who will always be with him, always have his back, and live a life of integrity in front of him.
You know, the reality, and of course we can touch on this as you do in the book, that, fathers don't really get the good pub these days, and dads, men in general, and the statistics aren't very promising either. I think with more than 40% and even much higher in some categories where children grow up in a home without a dad. That's pretty sobering.
It's very sobering, and here's what I think has happened. Over the past 40 years, I think in the 1970s when feminism took off, sexual revolution gained momentum. Our country began championing women, focusing on women, focusing on mothers. And there really was a revolution, and the casualty in that revolution, the casualties were fathers. Because marketers quickly picked up on this and thought, wait a minute, we want to jump on the bandwagon too. We want to make ourselves look good to women because they consume a lot of our products. And one of the best ways to do that is to make fathers look stupid. And so media began to marginalize fathers and really shame them. And it's hard to find nowadays a father who is represented in a realistic and positive manner in anywhere in the media. And we think, well, this is just TV or movies, but the truth is it's having a huge effect on the psyche of men and of children. We also have the government who's come in and told women, you know, you don't really need a dad in the home. Here we go. We'll pay for you. And then you also have women being taught, young mothers being taught, you can be your child's everything. You can do this. You don't need, your child doesn't need a father in the picture. And really, it's too much on a mother's shoulders. So what has happened is we have systematically pushed fathers out of the way, and I believe that this is in large part what's contributing to the father crisis in America. And the father crisis isn't just in inner cities where we have fathers literally not in the home and kids killing each other, but we have good fathers even in the home, or fathers who are divorced but really are good dads and want to be good dads, being sort of pushed away, feeling, and they're being taught sometimes by strong women like myself who live in homes with men, sort of saying, you know, we got this, we got this, we don't really need you here. And so I think that's really contributed to a lot of the either fathers not in the home or father disengagement if they are in the home, because the truth of the matter is a lot of really good dads out there, when I talk to them, they just kind of shrug their shoulders and go, I guess I'm doing a good job. I'm not really sure. And the research on how important fathers are in their children's lives and how significant they are in shaping the child's identity is the polar opposite of what fathers are seeing and what they're feeling. And that's where we need clarity.
Well, I'm sure. And maybe just say a bit about your practice. I mean, you've written about the strong fathers and strong daughters, this new book, Hero, being the strong father your children need. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it in practice time and time again in your counseling that, you know, this, as you don't use the word father crisis lightly, do you?
No, not at all. Actually, I've been at this over 30 years now. My husband and I have been married 36 years. We practice together. I've worked in all sorts of practice types, and currently we're in a private practice we built over 20 years ago. But here's what I've seen. You know, when I wrote Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters 10 years ago, it became an instant hit, and I was taken aback. I thought, what is happening here? And then I got a lot of mail from men saying, thank you for saying something nice about us. And I thought, wow, is it really that bad? So over the ensuing 10 years, from 10 years ago until now, I really started digging into this. How are fathers portrayed? How are fathers really feeling about themselves? What effect do they really have on their kids? And what does the research show about the importance of fathers? And there's an enormous disconnect between reality and the reality of how enormously important fathers are in their children's lives and what fathers believe and what the culture tells them about themselves. And I really felt, because I see this in my own practice, that the kids who have fathers, and I don't mean fathers with PhDs in psychology, I just mean good dads, decent dads, in the home, working hard, you know, they could use some work and this kind of a thing, but good enough dads in the home. Their kids, the ones I saw, were much quicker to overcome their depression, eating disorders, anxiety, much more likely to finish school and get on with life and go on to succeed in life. Because I've been at this long enough now to have taken care of a whole generation of kids, and now I'm taking care of my patients' kids. So I've seen this the whole cycle here, and what I see in my practice is exactly what the research shows, and that is that kids who have a father in the home, they have measurably higher IQs if fathers read to them. They have higher self-esteem, lower rates of depression, lower rates of anxiety, much less likely to get into trouble in the teen years, sex, drugs, and alcohol, much less likely to be violent and have school issues, far more likely to go on to college and to graduate schools. Self-esteem is higher. The list goes on and on and on, and my personal experience completely goes along with what the research shows. And I thought it's high time that dads know how huge they are, not just from their children's perspective that they're heroes, but what the hard science says about them.
We'll talk more about, dive into some of the, well, the science, and then just some great practical advice, because that's what the book is full of, from Dr. Meg Meeker. It's called Hero, Being the Strong Father Your Children Need, and we'll get into some of the ways that dads can be, you know, the kind of dad that their kids are looking for. And, you know, how do we walk back if we maybe have overreacted in some areas of discipline or anger? And how do we change the pattern, maybe break the cycle if we didn't have a good relationship with our father? We're going to talk about even the value of playing with your kids and all those kinds of things. We'll get to it all in the moment ahead. Dr. Meg Meeker, our guest today. She's a best-selling author. She's heard her often on national syndicated radio programs and TV programs, and she's a counselor in adolescent medicine, counseling teens and parents. The book is called Hero, Being the Strong Father Your Children Need. We do have some copies to give away, and you can sign up again online at myfaithradio.com. Go to the Connecting Faith show page, or give us a call, and we'll put your name in the drawing. 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And you may have a question. Maybe you just want to say a word of praise about your dad, too. We'd love to hear the story. Joining us with us here on Connecting Faith, and Dr. Meg Meeker returns in a moment.
Be courageous. We were made to lead the way. We could be the generation that finally breaks the chains. We were made to be courageous.
When you think of the word hero, maybe courage is one of the words that comes to mind. It's something that Meg Meeker has addressed in her new book, Hero, Being the Strong Father Your Children Need. Dr. Meg Meeker is author of Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, spent more than 30 years practicing pediatric and adolescent medicine and counseling teens and parents, and has been on media around the country, and we're honored to have her with us today. Meg, say a word about the courage, because I know you addressed that. That's one of the things that we want to exhibit and pass along, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely, particularly in this day and age where we're living in a culture that is not friendly to fathers, and it's not friendly to children. As a matter of fact, it's antagonistic to fathers, and I believe kids. It's a really tough culture for our kids to grow up in, and there's a lot of things that are coming between parents and children, i.e. electronics. So it's a really difficult day to parent. But here's the thing. Good fathers need to be courageous. And what I mean about being courageous, fathers know what is right and what is good and what is true. Many good men and good fathers are afraid to act on that, i.e. their instincts, on what to do is right with their kids, because they're afraid that they're going to mess their kids up. They're afraid they're going to alienate their children. Sometimes they fear their wives or their ex-wives giving them a hard time, and they just don't want to deal with it. But the truth of the matter is, to raise good kids in this culture is very, very simple, but it's hard. And you have to have courage to raise your children well. Let me give you an example, the way girls dress. I can't tell you how many fathers, really good dads, have come to me and said, you know, my 13-year-old goes to school wearing clothes that I really don't like, and when she's going to school, I say, hey, please change your clothes, I don't like it, and she starts to scream, and mom says, you just don't understand how girls dress these days, and I throw up my hands and go, okay, I'm not going to fight the fight. They should fight the fight. And first of all, their kids are worth fighting for. Their daughters are worth fighting for, because what ends up with girls who don't have boundaries put on them in dressing, dating, that kind of thing, they end up in the arms of some crazy teenage boy having sex with somebody in the backseat of a car because they're craving male attention that says, I see you, I get you, I like you and I want you. And if they get that from their fathers, which comes from being a courageous dad, that's how they stay out of trouble. So this is a really big deal, fathers learning to act on their instincts and to know this isn't right, so my child's not going to do it.
You know, you mentioned that the 13-year-old that sort of maybe has a little a fit. Our kids are all fit the – you know, they have fits at various stages in their lives, and it's easy to kind of butt heads with a strong-willed child. I know, several stories, illustrations out of the book, you talk about, daughters that, were just kind of purposely trying to, push the boundaries with dad, and the wise ones were quiet, but they're still strong, right?
Yes, very strong. And that's the thing. A couple of really key things in dealing with strong-willed kids, whether they're 2 or whether they're 20 or whether they're 15, is this: never take your kids personally. When you kids see your kids screaming, slamming doors, telling you you're a horrible father, complaining against you, whatever, that's not about you, Dad. That's about them. They're being a crazy teenager. So you have to treat them like this isn't a personal issue. I'm sorry, I'm smarter than you, and so you can't do it. But where I think fathers get into trouble is where they get drawn into believing, if I were a better dad, this child wouldn't be screaming. If I were a better dad, my daughter wouldn't be slamming doors and saying these things to me. Well, why? God is a perfect father. And look at what we do. I mean, we're really crazy. So God doesn't change his rules because of our behavior. So fathers shouldn't change their rules because kids are acting up. And I will tell you another thing. There are a lot of kids, if a teenager doesn't get attention, enough of dad's time, enough of dad's eye contact, you know, just knowing that dad wants to be with him. That teenager will do whatever she needs to do to get his attention, and usually what she does is pretty ugly. She'll run away from home. She'll go find a bad boyfriend, the one she thinks her dad is going to dislike the most, all to get attention from dad's. So in a way, the nastier your child is acting, the more they're saying, please, 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 dad, I'm out of control. Will you take charge here? And any dad can do that, and you don't need to yell to do that. You take it very impersonally. You say, you know what? Okay, this is the way it's going to be from now on. You can't be out until 1 in the morning. You got to be home by 11, and just stick to it. And if they're not home by 11, you get in the car and you find them. My dad did that to me once, and I didn't speak to him for 3 days, but you know what? I felt so loved.
The subtitle of the book is Being the Strong Father Your Children Need. And as Meg has said, it's not about becoming. It's being the strong father your children need. The title of the book is Hero. Meg, there are times, though, when we do overreact. To say a word about maybe how we walk back from those maybe over-disciplines or anger or, you know, communication breakdowns.
Yes, yes. All fathers wound their children. My husband's a great dad. My dad was a good dad. Man, he wounded me a lot because his temper would get out of control. But here's what you do. First of all, you make sure, as I said earlier, you're getting the big stuff right, that your kid knows you love him like crazy, but sometimes that love comes out sideways, and you get worried, and you snap, and you yell and stuff. So when you mess up, you go to that child and say, I am so sorry. I am so sorry I yelled at you. I'm so sorry I didn't get to your concert. I'm so sorry. Will you forgive me? And then you move on and you ask for forgiveness. And if you mean it, your child's going to forgive you. Now, if you have a lot of offenses stacked up over the years and your child is estranged, they will forgive you, but it may take years to get them back. But never, ever, ever give up on your child. If you're contrite and you mean it, and you do your best to love them well, and you do your best to ask for forgiveness, that you're never going to find a more forgiving person in the whole wide world than your child, because your child needs you to love them, even when they're an adult. Even before my dad died, I wanted, as a 50-year-old, I wanted from my dad to like what I did, and I needed him to love me very differently than my husband did.
Good word. Meg, one of the big areas that we keep us up at night perhaps is passing the faith along to our kids. You know, as you said, this culture is not very friendly to fathers, not very friendly to faith these days. How do we, any tips on passing the faith along?
Yes, first of all, live it. The more you love God, the more it will show. You know, you don't have to convince your kids that God is real. You have to live it. When you love God and it shows in your behavior and your actions, my husband took our kids every year, whoever wanted to go, on a medical mission trip to South America. Whether they wanted to go or whether they didn't, he went. And he didn't have to tell them any much. He just brought them along, and he had them work alongside of him. And if they didn't want to go, they didn't have to go. That's how you instill faith in your kids. First of all, it has to be real in you, and you have to live it out. You don't have to explain it. You don't have to defend God. But you do have to show your kids what you expect in their home. At our home, the rule was we go to church on Sunday. And until you're 18 and you're not living under our roof, you go to church just like you go to school. Now, that's just the way it is. And we still live that, even though our kids are out of the home. They still had to do devotions, and they still had to read some scripture, because they had to do their math and their English and everything else. And that was included. I think that parents are afraid to teach their kids their beliefs. They're afraid to talk to them about God. They're afraid to pray with their kids because they want their children to choose. Well, okay, but the time for choice is when they're mature enough to choose. You can't choose what color is your favorite if you don't know all the colors that are available to choose from. So I hear this all the time. I want my kids to choose their faith. Okay, but you've got to teach them what your faith is before they can reject it. So don't be so afraid of them rejecting it. But I'll guarantee you, if you continue to live out a faith that's true and honest and real, that makes your life better, that makes you a better person, your kids will either adopt it quickly or they will adopt it eventually, because they will test what they see in you against what else is out there. They may test it when they're 25, but if it's real and true and good, they will come back to it.
We have just a minute or so left, Meg. I'm just thinking maybe you can just offer a word of encouragement about, you know, the dad who wants to break the pattern. They didn't maybe have a good experience growing up. They want to do it differently. What's your encouragement to dads today?
Yes. I'm so glad you brought it up. I wrote a whole chapter, You're Not Your Father. A lot of fathers bring in, a lot of dads bring in their dad wounds into their parenting. And this is why I work with the NFL, because a lot of them didn't have dads. First of all, recognize what you wanted from your dad but you didn't get. And you have to do that, because if you don't recognize your hurt, you will bring it into your relationship with your kids. So that's really important. And resolve that somehow aside from your kids. Second, realize that you're wired with everything you need to change your history, to move forward. So as you move forward, focus on the big stuff and seek help, seek guidance from somebody. How do I love my kids really well when I don't know what it's like to be affectionate with somebody? So maybe ask your wife to help you. Maybe ask a friend to help you. But move forward in focusing on, you know, letting your kids know that you want their company, letting your kids know that you love them like crazy and you're trying your hardest. Even though it doesn't come out right sometimes, that's okay. And letting your kids know that you believe in them and you love them because they're yours. Start there. You can communicate that. And then build on it as it goes. Don't make it more complicated than it is, because being a great dad is really simple. You know, loving God is really simple, isn't it? But it's hard.
No question about it. Meg, you know, your father's passed on, as is mine, so we want to just encourage all those listening today to your dad still living. I wish him happy Father's Day this weekend. Thanks so much for coming on board with us today and sharing your great insights.
Thank you, and happy Father's Day.
It's Meg Meeker, Dr. Meg Meeker, joining us today. She's written a new book called Hero, Being the Strong Father Your Children Need. We've got a copy to give away. We'll do that at the top of the hour. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. You're listening to Connecting Faith. It was some time ago I had a chance to talk with Byron Forrest John, who's a pastor in Nashville, about what every man wishes his father had told him. And since we're talking dads today, I had a great conversation with Meg Meeker. I thought we'd share a little highlight from our conversation with Byron John. And we talk a lot about what it means to be a man today in today's culture.
As I went looking for definitions of masculinity and what the definition coming to the, from the church was, and I should put as a footnote, I do very much appreciate, Neil, the new emphasis on masculinity in the church and how masculinity and spirituality are no longer at odds with one another. And as I like to say, the smell of bacon coming from the church is a very positive thing. But what I noticed and observed was that within these books, there are no real specific chapters on Jesus Christ as the example of masculinity. And what you end up receiving are lessons from the life of David and lessons from the life of Moses and lessons from the life of Joshua and lessons from the life of Joseph. And biblically, all of those people point to Jesus. They're arrows that point to the need for Jesus Christ. Each one of those men have one thing in common, and that is that they needed Christ too, and they just happened to be used in the redemptive history of things to bring that to pass. And so that's a little disturbing, because what we end up doing, I think, is having a definition of masculinity that kind of doesn't really exist and might even be the wrong question. You know, if you, for instance, if you pattern yourself after David, King David, and say this is masculinity, you run into some really significant issues, because in reality, if all have sinned and all fall short of the glory of God, that includes everybody except Christ, which includes David. And as I like to point out, David, I have some friends that are better than David in the sense that if David committed adultery, fathered an illegitimate child, and then tried to cover it up through murder, I have friends that have never done that. The point being, not to diminish David's role in the biblical history and the messianic realities that are there, but why is the question is being begged here? Why aren't we focusing on Christ? And would Christ himself fit our kind of stereotype within Christianity about this? I don't think we should be moralizing the stories of David and Joshua and Joseph and saying that's what masculinity is, because those men are just as fallen as we are. I think we need to ask another question, which is, when Christianity and the gospel invade a man's life, what does that look like? And that's a much different question. So I think, in a sense, masculinity is a self-evident reality. I think the Bible doesn't actually define what masculinity is, because it assumes that we would understand it and we would know it. And I think the Bible is begging a bigger question, which is, when grace invades a man's life, what does it look like? And I think if you look at the New Testament, and it talks about the male's role to the female in marriage and the husband to the wife and to the children, it's always in the context of the cross. So ultimately, what I think masculinity looks like from the biblical and Christian perspective is servant and servanthood. And I mean in the most radical ways. And that's not weakness. And that doesn't exclude the other elements of masculinity that we enjoy. We shouldn't be afraid to be men in the church. But at the same time, if masculinity comes down to courage, and if it comes down to strength of character, and if it comes down to diligence, and if it comes down to commitment, and it comes down to consistency, then we have to admit that those traits are also the things that must be necessary in Islamic terrorist, meaning that there's nothing necessarily Christian about them. And I know that's odd to hear, but it's true. So ours has to go farther. And I think what we need to understand is that we're talking about a cross-centered, self-sacrificing spirit that is radically different and transcends all those things. It may include them, but it's not ultimately defined by them. And as I try to point out in the book, some of the most masculine men I have ever met are not field dressing deer, and they don't know how to bore the cylinders on a V8. They have pocket protectors and plaid shirts, and they're very common, but they are extraordinarily self-sacrificingly consistent and broken-hearted worshipers of Christ Jesus. And when we adapt the world's definition and lay it over the church's, I think we make a huge mistake, because what we're looking for is something that transcends those things in the spirit of Christ. So a man who is self-restrained and sacrifices his own wants and desires for his wife is a very masculine man. It's not a weakness. In fact, if I ask a man, do you love your wife? And they say, yes, of course. And then I turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and I say, but let me ask you a deeper question. Do you include your wife in on decisions you make? Because the Bible says, considers others more important than themselves, takes others into consideration. That raises the definition of masculinity and love. So we're talking about a love towards those we serve as men, which includes any character within masculinity. The guy that wears the wife beater T-shirt and is up under the hood of the 67 Mustang, and the guy who is really good at codes and computers. So the book itself is arguing even against, Neil, the church's definition, the current definition of masculinity. And it's my personal opinion that maybe the pendulum swung too far the other direction in a reaction to kind of the androgynous spirituality that's been offered by the church for so many years. And again, I love bacon and the smell of it coming from the church. But when Jesus himself is not included in our literature, which is trying to define masculinity, in my humble opinion, and you can read the book and come away with your own conclusions, that I think that there's something really wrong with that.
I was interested, you made a mention a phrase here early on talking about what sons are thinking, and I know you have two boys now. I'm wondering, what, as you've talked with them and talked with other men, and say, what are boys thinking, and what do they maybe want to hear most from dad, or what are the words that dad can say, or is it more about just the way he lives that's going to make answer those questions that what sons are wondering about?
Well, it's a little bit of both what he says and how he lives combined, guidance and example. But I can tell you exactly what adolescent boys are thinking. They're thinking that they're crazy, and they're thinking that they have to go through this alone. And that's kind of typically the reaction. I mean, if you just think about the amount of time that we spend teaching our sons how to ride a bike, or we spend teaching our sons how to throw a curveball, or we teach our sons about how to camp. I mean, we put a lot of attention on certain things, and we want to be involved in their lives. But when it comes to something like self-awareness or sexuality, we give no information to our kids at all, and our sons in particular. And so there's this weird phenomenon that, you know, puberty and adolescence is about the most obvious heads up of all time for parents. And we do very little in discipling our children and just warning them about the various physiological, emotional, relational, and social changes that are coming their way. And so in the absence of information, we force our sons to navigate this landmine-filled region of their life by themselves. And so they end up thinking that they're failing here, and that they're disappointing their parents, and that they're crazy, and that these struggles that they're having are wrong. And I think that are unique to them. And maybe the message coming from the church that, you know, you're not supposed to have feelings about girls and you're not supposed to be concerned about sex puts them in a very weird spot. So I know for a fact that these young men really think that they're alone and they are on their own and that they're completely insane, because overnight these radical changes come into their life. I can tell you what they want to hear as well. And this is where I think fathers maybe outpunt their coverage a little bit and think it's a little more difficult than it actually is. They want to know two things. And if you get this down, I think your relationship with your sons in particular will blossom, which might not be the most masculine way to describe that. But the first thing they want to hear is, I love you unconditionally. I mean, of all the questions, all the answers that came back to, you know, what do you wish your father would have told you from my survey, love was the number one thing. Like, I love you. I know you're going to struggle. You're going to mess up. You're going to blow it. You're going to make mistakes, but your father loves you. And my correction and my commendation are a part of that. And I think fathers misunderstand that their affection for their sons, the good and the bad, is a heads-up display for life that they need desperately, and they want it. They want that. And there's a difference, and this is just an observation, but there's a difference between the man whose father told him, I'm proud of you and I love you on a regular basis, and the man who grows up who didn't have a father that did that. The one who received it has a mooring in his life. So, number one, what they want to hear is, I love you. And then secondly, what they want to hear is counsel and really availability. That there's a difference between being present as a father and being engaged as a father, studying your children. And part of our role as a father is to observe their life and to point out areas of struggle which are natural to them that they're going to deal with when they have their first job, when they get married, when they get older, whether it be materialism or selfishness or laziness. A father's role is to speak in and kind of, as I've described it, Neil, you kind of, like a bike, you run beside their life as far as you can until they have it and they take it on their own. So what do they want to hear? I love you. And they want to know that you're available and you have counsel.
Yeah, that's what we want to be able to give. give our love, our counsel, and just be available. Talking dads today. That was Byron Forrest Yon. He's pastor of Community Bible Church in Nashville, Tennessee, and author of a great book called What Every Man Wishes His Father Told Him. And earlier we heard from Meg Meeker, Dr. Meg Meeker, a brand new book called Hero, Being the Strong Father Your Children Need. We post our interviews, the Byron Yon interviews posted already. It was from a while back, and we'll post Meg's here just as soon as the show's over. And you have a chance to go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com and listen again to parts you missed or pass it on to a friend, even better. We love that when you share these good resources with others who need some encouragement and some insight. So, Ted, tomorrow we're going to talk dates.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
On how to have a good date, right?
On a budget. This is my kind of date.
All right.
So we're talking $10 great dates tomorrow on Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.